Hello, everyone. Greetings, everyone who's listening or watching in. Hope you're having a profitable day's unleavened bread and a nice last day of unleavened bread. How many of you were successful this week and did not eat anything with leaven in it? All right, most everybody. Unless I just did something I don't remember or didn't think about, I think I was successful as well. There's been years that I haven't been, but I think this year was one of those that I actually accomplished, unless somebody brought leaven today, and it's back there in potluck. So I can't be blamed for that if somebody brought leaven, because I'm trusting y'all. But I think I've survived another 7 days. If someone asked you, or if you had to explain to someone why for the last 7 days you didn't eat leaven, and why you spent days leading up to this time period removing it from your homes, what would be your answer? How would you explain to them why you were doing these things? I think you could go different directions, but I would hope that if we were just going to keep the answer very simple, we would simply say that we are doing these days, and we've went through this time period, these last 7 days, because we want to have a relationship with our Father and with Jesus Christ. And that we understand that He wants to have a relationship with us. And He wants us to be in His family. And that's our end goal, is to be in His family. And because of these things, we know that sin breaks apart that relationship. And so we can't have a strong relationship if we have sin. And so God, thousands of years ago, beginning with His people, beginning with Israel, gave us this time period each and every year that we can focus on our relationship with Him and see where we need to improve, to see where our weaknesses are, to see where the sin is in our life. Because we know that sin is what separates us from God and what weakens the relationship that we are striving to have with Him. So we spend time cleaning out our homes, and we spend 7 days not eating leaven and hopefully focusing in on our relationship with our Father and with Jesus Christ and with what we need to do to improve that. So the next question, if you were explaining this to somebody, they may say, well, how does removing leaven, how does that physical act, how does removing leaven from our homes, you know, how does that help remove sin in your life? And how does that strengthen your relationship with God? Is spending a week, just 1 week out of the year, concentrating on sin in our life, is that all that we have to do? Is that all that's expected? Well, we know that more is expected than that. We know that in our relationships that we have in this life, with friends and spouses and family, you can't just spend 1 week a year working on that relationship and expect it to be a good relationship. You know, you'll have lots of problems if one week a year you're nice to somebody and then that's it. It's not going to work. Sometimes I try that and it doesn't work. Betsy reminds me that doesn't work. That's not going to work. I'm like, I was nice to you on our anniversary. Isn't that, you know, we're good for a year, right? So it takes more than that, and we understand that. We know that more is expected of us. But this week should be very profitable for us. The week that is about to end here at sunset, we should hopefully have learned many lessons, and we should have been able to use this time period as a way to strengthen the relationship, to solidify the foundation that we have in our relationship with our Father and with Jesus Christ. So there are a lot of different lessons that we can learn during this time period, but they really all go back to the simple fact, again, that God wants a relationship with us, and He expects us to remove sin from our life if we're going to have that relationship. That's really the simple reason why we observe this time period and observe these days. So, let's answer that question today. How does observing the days of unleavened bread, how does it really help us in each and every day of our life when it comes to getting rid of the sin that is in our life, and how does it help strengthen our relationship that we have with our Father? So today I want to spend most of my time just kind of going over a few lessons that we've learned and have learned in this last 7 days and in the days and weeks leading up to the days of unleavened bread. and how we can take those physical lessons that we've learned and then apply them to the rest of our life as we are continually, daily, working on strengthening our relationship and removing sin that is in our life. Now, before we jump into some of the lessons, I do want to lay a little foundation of what exactly is sin. Now, that may seem kind of silly. I mean, we're all sitting here. We all know what sin is, or we should know what sin is. If we've kept these days for what they really were, we would know what sin is. But I wanted to spend a little bit of time going over that because we live in a culture and a society that you never hear the word sin. I mean, think about it. You don't hear that. You're not going to hear it on a sitcom. You're not going to hear it on a reality show. You're not going to hear it on nightly news. You're not going to hear it if you watch, if you see one of the, on Sunday mornings, one of the church programs. You're not going to hear it anywhere. About a month or so ago, in one of the last sermons I gave, remember I talked about how the majority of Americans say they're Christian, yet the things that they view as morally acceptable are exactly the opposite of what the Bible says. And I'm not going to go over those things again, but the point is even in Christianity, sin isn't talked about. Sin isn't spoken of. Nobody wants to hurt anyone's feelings. You know, the concept is if it makes you happy and it doesn't hurt anybody else, then it's okay. And that, you know, you don't want to be judgmental. So we don't hear this word in our vocabulary anymore. We have changed terminologies so that they don't seem to be as harsh. You know, a couple come to mind. It used to be that, you know, if you were living with someone before marriage, I mean, it was pretty obvious you were committing adultery. Well, nowadays it's just called living together. You know, it's very innocent. I'm just, you know, just living together. You're not homosexual. You have an alternate lifestyle. Very innocent sounding. And we do that with, our society's done that with all the vocabulary so that we've taken sin out. So it's important that we are very grounded and have a good foundation as to, okay, what am I supposed to be removing from my life? Again, not just this 7 day. This 7 days was as a reminder. This is something that we need to be doing constantly in our life. So let's look at just a couple of verses that, again, remind us of what God talks about and what sin is. Let's go to 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3. Again, these aren't going to be anything new. But again, I think it's a good reminder. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 4. Because again, our world has tried to blind and make everything gray and no right and wrong, but God clearly has defined right and wrong for us from the very beginning. In verse 4, 1 John 3, it says, "Whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness." Now I'm reading out of the New King James. If you have the original King James, it says sin is the transgression of the law. Basically breaking the law. It means without law, or against the law. So we know, obviously, that if we go against God's laws, that's sin. And we know where to go in the Bible to find God's laws. We understand that. So being against God's laws, we know that that is sin. But turn over a couple of pages to chapter 5. And we'll start to see a little bit broader definition of what sin is. Still in 1 John 5, 1 John, but this time chapter 5. And we're just going to read the first four words of verse 17, which says, "All unrighteousness is sin." So now we have a little bit broader definition because unrighteousness means wrongfulness of character, life, or act. So basically, it's any action or behavior that is wrong equates to sin. So what's interesting then about this is then we have to look at our attitudes and look at our motives behind why we do things, behind the decisions that we make, and to see, you know, what's really going on in our mind. Why do we do things? We remember Christ's example where he spoke about the commandments, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, and how he broadened those. And if you say certain things, you know, you've committed hatred in your heart. If you look inappropriately, you've committed adultery in your heart. So our attitude is very important. For example, this last 7 days, you may have, you know, done perfectly. You didn't eat anything with leaven. You know, you changed the roads you drove on to the work so you wouldn't even go by a Subway. You know, you were right on the point. But the entire time you were like, I can't stand this time of year. This is, you know, this makes no sense. This is foolishness. Why am I having to do this? You accomplished not eating anything, but your attitude was horrible. You know, what do you think? How does God look at that? That would be sin. And so sin is then more than just breaking of God's laws. It's one component of it. It is also our actions, our motivations. And we know many other verses that talk about sin. Sin can be not doing something. If we know something's right, or if we see someone in harm's way that we could help and we don't do it, there's scriptures, Romans 14, verse 23, that talk about that. So if we want to get a just definition of sin, it says that we can go with, it says, sin is anything then that is contrary to the will of God, or anything that doesn't express the holy character of God. Again, sin is anything that is contrary to the will of God, or anything that doesn't express the holy character of God. So this is the standard that God has set for us. So this is what we are to remove these type of things from our life. And these 7 days have reminded us of that, and has given us a chance to really focus on that and to learn. And again, we know that how important it is that we get rid of sin in our life, because we see examples throughout the Bible of, again, how seriously that God takes this. Yes, God does love us. Jesus Christ willingly came and died for us, and they want that relationship with us, but sin cannot be a part of it. And we see with examples of the flood, Sodom and Gomorrah, where it's eventually God says, okay, enough's enough. Yes, I love you, but there are consequences for this, and there's a punishment for this. So sin is very important, and we have to take it seriously in our life. So, again, we have that foundation, so that's good, and we can take that. But let's talk then about some of the things that we've learned here in the last week, and how we can use the things that we've learned to put those into our life so that we can make removing sin part of our daily life, and not just something that we've focused here on for the last 7 days. You may come up with some of your own. These are the ideas. There's 5 different lessons that we'll go over. But they all kind of go back to the fact that, you know, we learn spiritual things when we do physical things. You know, that's how God has set it up. Most of us learn by doing. And so God has done that as well. And so these are some of the things that we've done here in the last week, in the last few weeks. So lesson number one is we learn that we can't remove sin on our own. We can't remove sin on our own. In other words, we realize that we have to surrender to God. We have to ask God for help to accomplish this. And we realize during this time period that if we're left on our own, we know we're going to fail. We won't be able to remove the sin in our life if we don't have God's help. And we see this by some interesting things that happen during these 7 days. Now, how many of you found something in your house this week that had leaven in it? We did. Betsy's not raising her hand, but we did. We came back Sunday. You know, we were in Dallas for the for Nothing But Observed, and the first Holy Day. And we got back Sunday late afternoon, and probably been home 5 minutes. I was still outside in the garage, you know, taking stuff out of the car, and Betsy walks out with a box of waffles. She's like, "Throw this away." And, you know, Betsy's very thorough. I mean, she does a really good job of cleaning everything out, but it was just in the freezer, probably next to the bag of ice. I mean, there's no telling, but it got missed. It got overlooked, no matter how hard we try. And so we see that, okay, we do everything we can. We clean the toaster, you know, we throw out stuff. We're focused on the house. Yet with all that, there's something that seemingly is obvious, a box of waffles. And so we learn that lesson then as we apply it. It's the same thing. We can try everything we can to remove sin. You know, we know what our weaknesses are. We know the things we need to do, and we can do our best and try. But if we don't have God's help, we'll fail again. We won't get anywhere permanently, long term. So we have to have God's help. Let's go to Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19. And you'll remember the story of the rich young ruler who came to Jesus and wanted to know, you know, what did he need to do to inherit eternal life? So Jesus said, well, keep the commandments. And the young man was, I think, kind of a little arrogant and was like, yeah, well, I've done all that. You know, give me something more. And he's like, all right, well, then go sell everything you have. Give it to the poor. And we know the young man walked away. Not sure what he did, but it says that he walked away sorrowful. So starting in verse 23, Jesus Christ is teaching his disciples, and he says, surely I say to you that it is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And again, I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And when his disciples heard it, they were exceedingly amazed, saying, who then can be saved? But Jesus looked at them and said, with men this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. And so we can look at these verses and apply them not just to the rich in this world, but as just us as being human beings. Right? We have weaknesses, we have problems, and without God's help, none of us would be saved. None of us would live up to the expectations. So we have to have God's help. We have to turn those things over to God. And we know that with God, all things are possible. And He will help us. And He will help us grow stronger with our relationship and remove those things that we need to remove. So that's lesson number one. One of the things that we learn is we can't do it on our own. Lesson number two is we learn that it takes effort and time to make changes in our life. It takes effort and time to make changes in our life. Once we surrender to God, once we have, realized that we need His help, we then have to make the next step, and which is trying to make permanent changes. But that just doesn't happen overnight. It's something that does take time. But again, we know that we are told to do these things. So we see this, though, again, in some of the things that we do leading up to the Days of Unleavened Bread. Our homes, our cars, our possessions, they don't just magically get cleaned, right? It'd be nice if, like, okay, well, it's a week away, and you snap your fingers, and all the leaven just disappears. That doesn't work. You've got to make a plan. You've got to spend the time, the energy, the effort to remove the leaven from your home and from your possessions. And so we see that when it comes from a spiritual sense, that the exact same thing is required to remove sin. It won't just magically happen. We're not just going to say, okay, God, I know I have a problem. I know You'll help me. I can sit back and I don't have to worry about anything anymore. No, we have to put our time in. We have to put our effort in and work to remove the things in our life that we need to. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4 and see what we're told, how our lives are supposed to look once we begin to put in this time, once we begin to put in this effort. We should begin to see a change in our life, just as we see a change in our homes as we de-leaven. I've talked before about in our house, Betsy, a couple of weeks out, she'll get everything out of the pantry that has leaven. I used to call it the mountain of leaven or the pile of leaven. And what snacks we need to go through and eat and things like that. But so, because that's the plan, is to pull that out. And so, starting in Ephesians 4, and we'll start in verse 17. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardening of their heart. So we know that we can't be like the rest of the world. Right? The rest of the world doesn't seem to have standards anymore. They don't believe that there's a right or a wrong. Well, we have to be different. That's not what we're called to. We know that there's our standards. We know that there's right and wrong. And then we know that there's rules that we have to live by. Continuing in verse 19, who being past feeling have given themselves over to licentiousness to work all uncleanness with greediness. But you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you've heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man, which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in righteousness and true holiness. So we are told that we are to become a new man, a new woman, meaning that we should begin to see real changes in our life as we begin to remove sin and begin to become closer with God. And again, that doesn't happen overnight. We have to have a plan. We have to put effort in. We have to put time in. We have to work on learning more about what God requires and growing their relationship. But it's something that is required. We are to become a new man. The old problems, the old things that we have in our life, we need to remove. And if we're going the right direction, we'll see a difference. We'll see things get better in our life. Lesson number three, things that we have learned, is we learned that we can never let our guard down. We can never let our guard down. We know that Satan is always out there. And we know that Satan understands what our weaknesses are probably better than we do. And that if we let our guard down, then that's when problems arise. That's when we make mistakes, and that's when we make bad choices, as we talk to Avery and Joe about all the time, of making right choices. A lot of times we, as adults, we make bad choices, and Satan's right there pushing us along the way. But what we learn during these 7 days is, again, we learn not to let our guard down as we're trying to avoid leaven. Because leaven is all around us. It seems that during these 7 days, it seems like the amount of Subways and McDonald's grow. You know, they seem to open all everywhere. A lot more commercials, you know, if you see. In fact, if you were here early today, and this is, I don't think this has ever happened, but if you came in early today, they were having lunch outside with nice big bready sandwiches. I mean, it's right there. And I'm like, really? It's all around, and it seems to be, we're more aware of it. I mean, I can go a week and never eat a piece of bread, and normally don't. But somehow this week, you know, there seemed to be more brownies and cookies in the staff lounges, and like I said, there's a Subway on every corner now, you know. So we're aware of it more. But we know because of that, we're very on guard, right? I mean, a lot of times if you're out, you may think, you think before you eat, okay, is this okay? You know, do I look at the ingredients? So we're aware, because we don't want to eat anything with leaven in it. Well, that's the same way we have to be, obviously, in our life as we're trying to avoid sin. Because sin is all around us. It's everywhere. And Satan will put things in front of us that he knows that will entice us. And we're all different. We all have different things that tempt us and entice us. But Satan knows. Let's turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1. And again, just like whenever you're out and about this week, you know, if you drove by a Subway, there was no sin in that, right? You didn't eat any leaven. You drove by, you might have noticed it, whatever it may be, but that's fine. You kept on driving. If you'd have pulled into the Subway, went in, ordered a sandwich, it would have been a different conversation. But just seeing the Subway wasn't a big deal. And that's the same thing with sin. James chapter 1, and let's start in verse 12. It says, "Blessed is the man who endures temptation. For when he has been proved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him." Now, it'd be easier if it just said that, you know, blessed is the man because you'll never have to go through any temptations, everything's going to be great. But it didn't say that. It says, blessed is the man who endures temptation, meaning we're going to be tempted. "Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed." So when we make bad choices, when we sin, I mean, it is on us because we're making that choice. We're deciding that, you know, we want to go down that road. You know, it's not, you know, yes, is Satan there, you know, working against us? Yes. But is it Satan's fault? No, we're making the decision. We don't have to say yes to Satan. We don't have to say yes to that temptation. Verse 15, "Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death." And so, again, the temptation itself is not the problem. It is our response to the temptation. It is our decision that we make. And if we make the wrong decision, then that leads to sin. And then the consequences of that. So we have to keep our guard up. Just like we've done this last 7 days, you know, to make sure that we avoid leaven. We have to do the same thing in our spiritual life and in our daily walk when it comes to, you know, being on guard and avoiding the temptations that are out there. The next lesson goes right along with that is that, obviously, if we're going to avoid temptation, we learn to keep temptation and keep sin as far away from us as possible. So we keep temptation and sin as far away from us as possible. Again, we do this in this last 7 days, right? I suspect that nobody in here de-leavened the house, put it into a box and set it out on the porch so you could look at it every day and go, oh, wow, I wish I could have that. Right? How many of you went to Subway just to smell bread? Probably not, right? Kids probably would want to go to, you know, Krispy Kreme and smell the donuts. We don't do that. You know, we don't do that during this week. We don't tempt ourselves with it. We don't have it around. You know, when we take it out of the house, we throw it away. It's permanently gone. That's how we observe these days. And so we need to do the same thing in the spiritual life again. Take the same lessons that we've learned when, as far as physically avoiding the leaven in our life, and apply them as we try to remove sin in our life. You know, one of the most interesting stories that I find in the Bible is really the example of Joseph. You know, that he literally ran away from sin. And it's something that, you know, I know in my life, you know, I have not ran away from sin the way I should have all the time. Probably all of you here would say have similar stories. But the point is that he didn't sit there and say, well, you know, it'll be all right. I'll just go and work in the other room. She'll finally leave me alone. You know, he didn't sit there on the gray line. I mean, he ran away and left the situation. Didn't matter what the repercussions was. He ran away. And so that's what we need to do. We need to run away. Again, when keep the temptation, keep sin, keep it as far away from us as possible. Because what we tend to do is we like to kind of see how close we can creep up to that, you know, cliff. Like, I'm to the cliff. I'm like, well, maybe I can, you know, I can look over and won't fall off. Well, the problem is, especially out here, the breeze will pick up and off the cliff you go. Right? We can't get close to the edge of the cliff. We have to get away and move away. And so we learned that this week. We won't turn there for time's sake, but 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6, we've read it many, many times here over the last few weeks, but a little leaven leavens the whole lump. It doesn't take a lot to put your life into a spiraling downhill when you have sin around. So we have to keep it far away from us as possible. Take the lesson that we've done the last 7 days and apply it into our life. Lastly, the last lesson we've learned is that we have to examine ourselves daily. Examine ourselves daily. Again, we learned that, talked about this a second ago, but you know, we're very focused this week. We're not going to eat anything. If we're out at a restaurant, you know, we overly think, okay, what's the menu? You know, we probably wouldn't even go to, you know, you wouldn't even go to Olive Garden this week because you know there's breadsticks there. I can say no, but I know they're there. You know, I don't even want to deal with that. And so, you know, we do that. We examine everything very closely during this week because we don't want to have anything. And that's how we need to do with our life. It's not something we can just do once a week or once a week during the year. And then say, okay, well, that'll carry me on, you know, till the next year. This is something that we have to do every day. Every day we have to look at our life and go, okay, did I win or lose yesterday? You know, did I remove sin from my life or did I let sin win yesterday? And how do I make that adjustment today? And go day by day. Because again, battling sin and removing it is a lifelong process. It'd be nice if it was just, you know, snap your fingers and everything was great, but that's not the world we live in and that's not how we are as human beings. But we can make daily progress and we should make daily progress. And just every year, God does give us that reminder and he kind of gives us that little extra boost to say, okay, you know, you need to be working on these things. You know, we're trying to work on this relationship here. You need to fix the cracks and focus again. So he does remind us each year, but it's something that we need to do every day. Be focused on it every day of our life. Let's turn to Romans chapter 6. We begin to close here, Romans chapter 6. And just verse 12 says, therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body, that you should obey it in its lusts. In verse 16, do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey, whether of sin to death or of obedience to righteousness? So again, it's a decision that we have to make, a decision that we make every day. Who am I going to obey? Am I going to obey God or am I going to obey myself? You know, whose needs, whose desires are more important? And so every day we examine ourselves. Well, brethren, here in closing then, as we talked about earlier, we learn a lot by doing things and God has set that up. And so we've learned a lot of different things this last 7 days and the days leading up to it. We've learned in performing the task of de-leavening in our homes and then from not eating anything with leaven in it, that we've been reminded how vigilant we have to be in our thoughts and our actions. And how vigilant we have to be to avoid the things that we know are wrong. You know, because we do. We understand what sin is. We have a good grasp of that. It's just a matter of do we apply that? Do we make the right choices? God knows that in spite of our good intentions, we all will sin, which is why he had to send his son to die for us, which is a blessing for us. But we also know then that because of that sacrifice and because of God's grace, that he will help us overcome sin. And we can move forward and we can put that new man on. So we hopefully won't become too discouraged as we look at ourselves and see the different problems and sin in our life. But instead, we should be very hopeful and, again, be remindful of the fact that the knowledge that we have and the awareness that we have is the first step in getting rid of sin. You know, we're aware of it, we understand, and so that's going to help us a lot as we remove sin from our life. So let's take the tools that God has given us and take the lessons that we've learned here in the last 7 days and use them to eliminate sin that is in our life and to move forward in our quest to become members of God's family.